Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
He's standing by. He's ready to go. A new show called Mythic Quest, Raven's Banquet, has premiered on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, it's really good.
Is it to premiere this Friday? You guys have already been watching.
Yes. Yeah. It's all available Friday. Now.
Yep. Every bit of it?
The whole season.
All of it. Love it. Excellent. Please welcome Mr. Rob McElhenney to the program. Hey, Rob.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
We're good, man. How you doing?
Oh, I'm so happy. So happy.
So happy?
Yes.
Just with the new show and everything, or just in general?
Yeah. We got a very warm and welcome reception. It seems like people are really digging the show. That feels good.
Well, as well they should. And as a gamer, and I had no idea what a gaming fan you were, everything is pitch perfect because I, you know, I'm on sites like IGN and all these nerdy game sites. And yeah, it's really cool. I could see though where you might be worried because you come out of the gate and it is this too, you know, hyper focused in the audience. But it plays whether you know gaming or not, because the ensemble is so damn good. How long did it take you to get everybody together the way you wanted them, Rob?
Yeah, that was really the most important part. We bifurcated, like right from the very beginning, we bifurcated the writer's room. So half the room were hardcore gamers, either people who play games many hours a day or actually worked in a game development studio at one point in their lives. And the other half have never played a video game in their lives.
It's perfect.
And that was important to us because I wanted to make sure. And I kind of feel... that I landed like right in the middle of those two parties because, you know, I grew up playing games and I love playing games, but it's not something that I wouldn't consider myself a gamer. And I wanted to make sure that anybody who was watching the show could just drop right in.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about because there are points in both Preston and I've had them where you start playing a game and then the sun's rising and then you're like, dear God. But those times tend to go away as you, I don't know, do things like pay your bills and talk to your wife and life get, you know, diminishes that. But as far as this realm of video games and at this level, and you make the point in the show, in the opening episode, just how lucrative this is and how much money we're talking about. So, and you went, I guess you had been at, is it Ubisoft or Ubisoft? I always mispronounce it.
But they say the same thing.
Okay.
They pronounce it both ways, Ubisoft and Ubisoft, because it's a French company.
Okay, so it's a great video game company, and they're terrific. Some of my favorite titles. You were there, I guess, on a visit, and this is when you got the notion to do the show, correct?
Well, they approached us. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they came to me and said, hey, we're big fans of Sunny. We're interested in doing a game in this industry. Are you interested? And I said, no, thank you. I have a job. I'm good. And they said, hey, will you come up to Montreal and meet some of the, you know, people, walk around in the studio and meet some of the devs. And that's what I did. I figured it was a free trip to Montreal, and I'd never been to Montreal. And I just scheduled it to be a couple of days so I could go out drinking and have a good time, and wound up spending two full days there. And I think within the first 10 minutes, I knew that we had a show.
Wow.
That's cool.
Just because of the oddball characters, or what brought it?
Well, I walked in, and one of the first people I saw is kind of... you know, the character that I created of the lead creative director, sort of an amalgam of a bunch of different guys. But one of the first people I met, he was bedazzled. He was all in black. He had these cowboy boots on. He was covered in rings. He had this like long, glorious man bun, or long, glorious hair that he put up into a man bun. And he had a cane, right? And he was walking with a cane, but I swear he was like 35 years old. And I'm like, why is he walking with a cane? There was no discernible limb. And I realized it was just like an accoutrement.
Okay. A pompous little thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And he comes walking towards me, and I say, hey, man, how's it going? He's like, good, good. I said, what do you do? He said, I'm a creative director. I had no idea what a creative director was. And I said, oh, what does a creative director do? And he sort of looked off into the distance, and then he looked back, and he said, brother, I build worlds.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Mr. Creative Director, can you excuse me for one second? And I went outside and I called Charlie, and I was like, buddy, we got to do a show about
this. Oh, excellent.
Well, it's the ultimate sort of meeting of, so you have people who are code writers, and you have people who are, who've just, you know, always been at the computer, blending with people who create worlds and blending with people who have to monetize these things and blending with the story writers and people who normally would not have to in the real world, probably not synchronize for any other reason. But in the gaming world, they're all necessary components. And that's
absolutely right. And look, for as much as I make fun of some of the creative directors, the truth of the matter is, they really are, I mean, you can't say it out loud, but they truly are building worlds.
Yeah.
And they're building worlds that millions, if not billions of people across the globe are jumping into from a virtual reality perspective and spending hours and hours and hours not only playing but communing with other people from all over the world. I mean, it really is an incredible job. And one of the points that's made very early on is that, by the way, this is a true stat. And I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but it'll blow you away. You're happy to look it up. You're welcome to look it up. So Grand Theft Auto, everybody knows Grand Theft Auto, right?
Yeah.
They've
mm-hmm.
at least heard of it. Okay. So Grand Theft Auto, as a franchise, has made more money than Star Wars.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
More money than Star Wars. That's including all the merchandising.
That's unbelievable.
Grand Theft Auto as a series has made more money than Pixar, the entire studio, sold to Disney.
Wow. I think, Rob, there was a stat, and we reported on it because, you know, we are gamers, most of us. I think it was one of the Halos, or perhaps one of the Call of Duties, was the most purchased form of entertainment in one day in the history of the world. That level. So that's why this whole process, and again with the show, and you're working on, what is it, like a massive multiplayer online game, which is, you know, speaks like World of Warcraft or things of that nature. And and so anyone, even if you dabble or if you have a kid who dabbles, you can definitely tie into it. I wanted Nick, I know you have a question, so you go first on phone.
Well, I'm not a gamer, and I still love this show. And so to me, it just shows that it doesn't matter if you're a gamer or not. Because for me, Rob, and Steve mentioned it earlier, but the supporting cast is phenomenal. F. Murray Abraham and Danny Pudi. But I love this actress that you have. Her name is Jessie Ennis on the show, and she's been in a TV show called Love. She was in Better Call Saul. How did you find her? Did you know her beforehand?
No. In fact, that character did not exist in the original script that Charlie, Meg, and I wrote. Jessie came in and read for like four different characters because we knew as soon as she walked in, we knew she was funny, but she just wasn't quite right for any of the characters. And so we sat down and we're like, well, we have enough experience to know that just because you wrote something doesn't mean that it's going to work. And when you find somebody super talented, you better make it work. So we literally just created that character after we met her. It was written for her, even though she came in and read for other characters. And we sort of did that with a number of different people. But yeah, she's a lunatic. I mean, she plays a psychotic individual. And in fact, in a lot of ways, her and Murray's character, CW, are the closest things that we have to Sonny characters on MythicQuest.
So F. Murray Abraham, how cool is it to have him as he's the writer of the stories. He is
pompous.
He's pompous. He's actually living, though refuses to admit he's living in the offices there. But you're with freaking F. Murray Abraham. How fun is that to be with this guy?
Yeah, so the character of CW. So I spent a lot of time hanging out with George R. R. Martin over the years, just because of friends with Dave and Dan from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And so, as many of you know, George wrote the Game of Thrones series, and he's just a very sweet guy. So this isn't really based on George, but we were thinking, like Charlie and I were joking, what would have happened to George or Ray Bradbury or someone of that ilk. Had they have come out in the 60s or 70s, written like a smash hit, something that was critically and commercially accepted, beloved in the science fiction milieu, and then won a bunch of awards, and then he promptly just blew everything up his nose and drank himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. To the point where doesn't even remember whole decades.
Okay.
But he lived through it, like Keith Richards, mm-hmm. right? And so what would happen if he had all this, like, talent, but now he just ruined his shot? And where would he be working now? Well, we realize, like, because of the size and scale of the video game industry, from a science fiction perspective, what if he was working in this industry? And yet, he really is a stranger in a strange land because he doesn't understand gaming. What he knows is story. And some of these games, the stories themselves are just so unbelievably engaging and articulate that this would be something he'd be into.
Now, I haven't seen. I don't have the format yet. The Apple TV Plus. I'm going to get it and I'm going to watch this. But does his character hate the fact that he's in that position right now?
No. Well.
Okay.
He certainly doesn't turn his nose down to it. He recognizes the thing that drives him insane is when. We have other characters like monetization experts, and his job is played by Danny Pudi. His job is just to make money. That's all he cares about. They're in a constant fight because from CW's perspective, Murray's perspective, it's all about the story. Everything is the story. It's the most important part. And to the monetization, Danny's character, from his point of view, it's just about the money. And so you have a lot of these disparate characters and personalities that all go into making these video games. And the truth is that everybody is important and everybody is at the top of their game. And everybody is egomaniac to a certain degree. And so they're constantly at war with each other.
One of the things the show does really well is it points up the importance of influencers with the video game world, and you have a character named Pootie Shoe, who is this this little kid who's clearly paying his parents' mortgage, and he's online with his gamer chair, and he's success of Mythic Quest will live and die by his thumbs up or thumbs down, but the kid is great. Who's the kid playing Pootie Shoe?
His name is Elisha. Henning, and we were, first of all, that's based in reality. I mean, we didn't make that up.
No, I know. There's a whole bunch of guys like that.
Yeah, so you have this, like, massive, massive industry. I mean, truly an industry that dwarfs the traditional entertainment industry by billions of dollars each year. And it's all resting on the shoulders of these YouTube influencers. And we all like to think, we all like to pat ourselves in the back and talk about how big our industry is. You know, ooh, look, 5 million people watched Sunny last year. This movie made $100 million this year. And meanwhile, these YouTube influencers truly have 25, 35 million views a week.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I like how you lampoon them because, his, like, contemporary is a guy named, I think it's a Laugh Out Loud, and how important these guys really think they are. And
Absolutely, it's such an important gig, and they really have to cater to, and oftentimes pander to 14-year-olds. And when you have a couple of $1 billion resting on those shoulders, you better believe that they will cater to them.
Rob, I made it up past episode Dark Quiet Death, and I was talking to a friend of mine. Her name's Alyssa, who is friends with your sister Katie, and what was weird at the end of the episode, I thought that the writing credit said Caitlin McElhenney, and I thought that was weird because I thought your wife's last name is Olson, and professionally it was. And then I realized after talking to Alyssa last night that your sister wrote that episode, and I thought that was a beautiful. I know this is a funny show, but I thought that was a beautiful episode.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, look, I've been begging my sister to come on to our writing staff on Sunny for a decade. She's without a doubt the funniest member of our family. And she's just like has been blowing me off forever and just has no interest in TV, doesn't even like TV that much.
Oh, there you go.
And so finally I was like, look, Kate, we got a new show. Maybe you can come in and help us out with it. And she said, I don't know. She's like, I don't work well with others. And you're in a writer's room and I don't know if it's going to work. And she came in and she just had an absolute blast. So, for me, it was like, first of all, having a family affair, as you guys know, has always been important to me. My brother Patrick has worked on and worked with me for years. And so now this was just an opportunity to extend that. And people are like, oh, isn't it nice that you gave your little sister a job? I'm like, brother, you have no idea how badly I have been begging her, how much I've been begging her to come work with us, because she has been so additive to the process for in so many ways. So not only did she write that episode, but, you know, the way the writer's room works is that you're there all day, every day. So
right.
She has a hand in breaking half the season last year. And then on top of that, she's in our writer's room on Sunny now. So I got her. I got my hooks in her.
Well, and honestly, from the way the show is playing so far, being a couple of episodes into it, you do get that entertainment. You do get the ensemble, as I said before. But as a gamer, I do enjoy the peek behind the curtain. And, like, for example, I never knew there was a technical term for it. What is it? It's TTP, time to penis, correct?
Yeah.
Can you explain what that is? Because I've always known of the existence. I never knew it had an actual classification.
Yeah. So lest you think we're getting too highbrow with, right. With this show, we have a lot of Sunny influence in there as well. Obviously, it's myself, Charlie is one of the co-creators, David Hornsby, who plays Cricket, he's an EP, and Megan Gantz, who's one of our showrunners on Sunny. So we still have a lot of Sunny-esque humor in there. So one of the things that we were told by the gaming studio, Ubisoft, that there is a real thing called TTP. And we were like, what is TTP? They say, time to penis. We're like, that sounds right up our alley. Explain that to us, please. And they said, it's when you put a new item into a game, whether it be some sort of world-building mechanic, meaning like something you can build or something you can dig with. In this case, it's a shovel. Whether it's like snow prints or something like that, how long it takes for the gaming audience to build and make penises. And we're like, that is the most juvenile, dumbest thing we have ever heard. And they're like, no, it's a real thing. It's a real problem. Like, we have to go, and they like monitor it. How long does it take? And I think in Red Dead Redemption 2 last year, which was one of the biggest games of 2 years ago, one of the biggest games in the world, they had this world-building mechanic where you could go out with your horse and you could ride through the snow into the plains, and it was just like supposed to be fun. Well, what people were doing were just going out to the snow and riding around in the shape of penises. And they said, what was the TTP? 4 minutes.
Four minutes?
Four minutes from the time the game was released to the time they went to YouTube and found these. I can't believe I'm even.
That's awesome.
Hell, I wouldn't do that. Yeah.
I'm now in my 40s, all right? Yeah. And yet I still. And by the way, so are you. So are you all.
Yeah,
all
at laughing. Least.
I mean, yeah, I'm older, yeah. Well, it's still funny.
So, Rob, I wanted to ask you, because I saw you on Colbert last week, which was really cool, and it was the first time I think you had ever done late-night TV with just you. Didn't have anybody else from Sunny on with you promoting Mythic Quest. You've been doing It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia for 14 years, right? 14 seasons?
Correct.
And as a result, we've known you for a long time, which is really cool for us. But it seemed to me like Stephen Colbert and maybe the audience, the watching audience, the viewing audience, was people are still getting to know you. Do you think that that's the case?
Well, you know, I've never done any of those talk shows, I managed to avoid them for a long time. And look, the truth of the matter is that in the beginning, like, I really have a chip on my shoulder that it took me a while, and it's taking me a while to knock it off. But maybe this is just a Philly in me. When in the beginning, when we were first coming out, we desperately needed to spread the word, right? And you guys were there from the very beginning, as I recall. And I remember having you guys having me on. I mean, I think after we released the first seven episodes, or at least even the first episode.
Yeah.
And I remember desperately trying to get on to Letterman and Leno. That's, or maybe it was Jack Parr. It was like
all the way back to Jack Parr.
I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we would like desperately try to get on these shows, and they were like, no, we don't know who these people are. And then years went by, and all of a sudden, Sunny starts to hit in, you know, season six, season seven, and then we started getting the calls. Hey, we'd love to have everybody on. And we realized, well, now, you know, as the talk shows were starting to decline and we were becoming more successful, now they wanted us on. And it always felt like, wait, so you weren't going to help support us when we needed you.
Right.
Now you need us, but our presence on your show helps you.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, everybody else was like, ah, who cares? And I kind of just, I just harbored this resentment.
I can
for
see
so
that.
Long.
That's yeah. a, definitely yeah. a Philly thing.
But I also understand, but you know, and the truth of the matter is that's the way show business has always worked, you know, sure. and you well know that, but I could see, yeah, you have something that you believe in. And I think you held the chip just about the right amount of time because,
well, and
yeah.
look, the truth of the matter is beyond that, they're nerve wracking
yeah.
because you know, you have millions and millions and millions of people watching you. And it's not like you're on on Sunny. I'm in the editing room, so I can
right.
change and fix, and I get 15 takes. But you know, you're in front of a live audience. I don't really do a lot of live audience work, and then you know it's blasting out. You know, you have family members watching and friends watching and things like that. So you get very nervous. So my feeling was like, maybe I just pulled off on it. And finally, I decided to go back.
Yeah,
obviously you have Philadelphia pride. Shows in everything you do, Super Bowl, Eagles, the name of your other show. I don't know if you still have, like, high school pride in St. Joe's Prep. And if you do, did you guys do Night of Scenes when you were at school? Because they just did that this past weekend. My nephew was a part of it. And I wasn't sure if that was something that you did when you were in school there.
No, I didn't. Well, first of all, I do have a tremendous amount of pride in my high school. I talk about it quite a bit as being a seminal experience in my formative years, and I love my school. But no, I started doing plays in high school, and really it was like the springboard to a career because I was such a terrible athlete, like awful, and I tried everything, and I would just get my ass kicked like all the time in every single sport. And then I still didn't really necessarily have any interest in theater, except when we got a call one day over the loudspeaker that Notre Dame, which was one of our sister schools, needed boys for their plays. And I thought, huh. So wait a second. I get to leave school early.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get to go to Notre Dame and be the only boy in the school. I'm going to try that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Dip my toe in the water.
Really what got that's really what got me into it. And then I was like, well, I don't care about this play, but I just get to meet girls. And then Murray and Mercy needed boys, and Gwen and Mercy needed boys. And next thing I know, I'm doing play after play after play after play because it turned out that I really had a ton of fun. But that was – so I would do a play at the Prep. That's all boys. I didn't care.
And look where you are right now. I wanted to ask you about working with Apple and the other shows that, you know, they have M. Night Shyamalan's Servant and a morning show and the other projects. And everyone who's working with them say they're just phenomenal. Basically, you know, turnkey, here's the money, have at it. Has that been your experience?
Yes, it has. I mean, truly – and this is not just me pandering or being a company man. They have let us do exactly what we wanted to do. I mean, the show you're seeing, much like FX, you know, from the very beginning, they said, hey, look, they're putting millions of dollars into this thing, so they're going to have opinions.
Yeah.
But when push comes to the shove, they always let us do what we want to do. And
that's got
to
be cool.
To say that there hasn't been, you know, some rocky – I mean, they're essentially a startup, which is really funny. They're a $1 trillion startup.
Yeah.
Because this is something new that they're doing, right? So to launch not only all these shows, but then an entire streaming platform is always going to come with this with some bumps in the road. But I think they've really done an amazing job. Amazing job.
I had no idea what a decent singer and guitar player you were, and then Instagram showed me that over the last couple of months. Is that something new that you've brought to your repertoire, and we're going to be able to see more of that? Seriously, it's hilarious stuff.
I've gotten a better response on the video that I made with my wife and put up on Instagram.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
In like 4 minutes, like we didn't think about it. We were like, oh, this would be funny. Let's just do this real quick. Put that up there. I think that has like, I don't know, 700,000 views or something. And I've gotten more of a response on that than any show I've ever made. Yeah, I don't know. I've been playing guitar poorly for a while. My problem was I learned how to play when I had an old roommate who was right-handed. So all the guitars he had were right-handed, and I'm left-handed.
Oh, no.
And so I had to learn how to play right-handed, and I think that's probably why I'm I'm so bad, but I'm good enough to play the Friends theme song. So.
Oh, my God. So you can play the guitar on the wrong hand better than I can play on my right hand is what you're telling me.
I suppose so. I mean, I guess that's what this entire interview has been about, just making you feel humiliated.
Inferior. Well, yeah, I always feel inadequate when I talk to you. Hey, listen, we also, Rob, you and I, we both have Bernedoodles. So I have a Bernedoodle named Reggie. Dude. He's the best, and clearly, I have two dogs, and he's my favorite, and I have no problem saying that because the other one has no idea. But I wanted to know if your Bernedoodle is as dumb and clunky as mine is. He's just such an oaf. He has no idea how big he is.
I'll tell you what, he's definitely clunky, but he is smart. Like,
yeah.
I look into his – okay, so the other dog, I'm looking at him right now, so they know I'm talking about him. The other dog is a French bulldog, right? And this one is a moron, and I love this dog, but you look into his eyes and you stare into the
abyss.
Into the abyss of ignorance. He is happy, real happy, but I mean, just an idiot. And I look into Simon's eyes, the Bernedoodle, and I see a human being. I think there's a human being behind those eyes. They look like he looks cognizant, like he knows he's looking back into my soul and wondering if I'm as smart as he is.
Well, from what we understand, he also has a deal with Apple Plus.
Yeah. So,
let me tell you something. He is the workingest dog in Hollywood. We got a call one time from his trainer saying, hey, would you mind if I put him up to for a commercial? And we were like, oh, sure, whatever. Next thing you know, he's working more than Caitlin. commercial. He did a commercial for Allstate Insurance. I mean, he's working nuts.
Wow. Well, I mean, if I may, how is that fairly lucrative?
Honestly, we donate all the money. So we give 50% to the trainer and then 50% to the ASPCA. So we never actually see that money, but
it's very nice.
Yeah, we're happy to get him out of the house for a week, and then he also comes back so incredibly well trained for another 6 months.
Man, I am so jealous because your Bernedoodle is tricolored, mine's only bicolored.
That's one more thing.
Yeah, I know. I'm so inadequate, yeah. Man.
You're actually now. It's embarrassing when you start to look for ways to be inadequate. Just let them come nonchalantly. It's a little more. I wanted to ask you, Rob, just quickly because of the sort of cutscenes that you use in and out of the scenes in. Mythic Quest is Ubisoft providing those as well because they look very Assassin's Creed-ish. They look really well rendered. Are they doing that?
Yeah, yes. So we wanted to make sure right from the very beginning that it was clear when we did come back to them and say, okay, we were interested in making a game, that we weren't going to do a commercial for Ubisoft.
Right,
that was important to us, right? Like, and we also wanted to present the industry in all its glory, but then in we wanted to present some of the negative aspects too. So that is something we jump into, which is like gender disparity and the toxicity of some of the environment.
And Nazis being a fan of your game.
absolutely. Something we struggle with Sonny as well. Using us as memes and such. But Ubisoft was 100% in favor of that. And one of those things was making sure that we weren't just using Ubisoft games. And they were down. They were down right from the very beginning.
That's
the
cool.
Issue was because we were a new show and nobody had seen it or heard of it, a lot of studios were reticent at first to allow us to use some of their games because they just wanted to make sure. I mean, look, the truth of the matter is over the last 15, 20 years, anything you've seen in popular culture has presented the industry in a pretty negative light. Specifically gamers themselves, and we just did not want to do that. We wanted to make something that celebrated the industry, but they didn't know that.
Yeah. Right?
So they were a little nervous. So we had a couple of games, a couple of studios, Rockstar, Ubisoft, and a couple of games like Red Dead and then Assassin's Creed and then some other games outside of the Ubisoft oeuvre that allowed us to use their stuff. And I'm hoping now that it's out and people can see it, we'll get a lot more of that next year.
Excellent. Rob, I want to mention this before we wrap. The Cora for Kids Golf Classic is coming up this year. It's going to be at Philadelphia Cricket Club, and that registration is available now. We've got the information up. So excited to do that. And any idea if you'll be in for that event or not at this point?
I'm gonna have to make it happen this year in some way. I mean, I've heard, first of all, I was so bummed I couldn't make it last year, and I heard it was incredible. I mean, that golf course is legit.
So, yeah, it's the real deal.
I was hosting it, and man, that is freaking beautiful. Yep. However, I did drive up the wrong street and believe I was on a golf cart. but I'm like, oh my God, this looks like Hogsworth.
Once you found your way.
Yes, I took out a few players.
Yeah, and it's a Monday this year once again.
Oh, I didn't play. No, I'm a horrible player, but I hosted like a mofo.
Oh, good. And it sounds like you got into the booze a little bit, which is fine.
Yes. Yeah, so we got that information up, and leading up to that, I'm sure we'll get in touch with you once again and find out what your status is of stopping in for that event.
Yes, please. Well, look, I really appreciate all the support over the years, specifically this year. You guys are always the best, and thank you so much. It feels awesome to be, you know, a part of the number one show in the city of my birth, and it's really important to me that you guys continue to support me, and I'll continue to support you. Thank
you. Our pleasure, and congratulations on a hit.
Yeah, man, way to go! Let's hear it for him, Rob. Good to talk to you, man. Yeah. Talk to you soon. Mythic Quest, it is out as we speak on Apple TV Plus. We'll talk to you soon, brother. All right.
That's good. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Want more Preston and Steve? Get the whole show podcast or Bizarre Files at PrestonandSteve.com. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.